Hi, it's Thursday afternoon, and I want to share a few thoughts about the situation in the Middle East. Thanks to the sponsorship of the Sasson family in Teaneck, I had the pleasure of having lunch with Ehud and his wife not long ago when I was in Teaneck, 2-3 weeks ago, whenever it was. I think it was Bullock, and we had a very good time, and I appreciate him sponsoring this, the loyal listener and so forth. You know, I'm following, like you are, the goings-on in Israel and Syria and so on and so forth. And it's very weird because, you know, Israel's bombing them and then they're supposed to be friends with the new government, but they're not. Back and forth and forth and back. Meanwhile, last night I gave a lecture here in town where I brought up something from an old movie, which is what I do sometimes, a Turkish TV show. From some time ago, where they had a long series on, I mean, a very, very long, hundreds of episodes about Suleiman the Magnificent back in the 16th century, the greatest of the Turkish rulers. There was a whole episode there with Gracia Mendes, believe it or not. That's what it was. And meanwhile, the Sultan is saying over there, and this movie was produced probably 20 years ago, I don't know, this show, where he said, you know, Jews and Christians and everybody can live here under my rule. And, you know, it's like 1,000 flowers. And he said all the right things. And I was thinking to myself, this obviously happened before Erdogan. You know, 20, 30 years ago, I don't know how long ago, Israel and Turkey were tight. They were close allies. And Erdogan turned around. Meanwhile, the new government in Syria has clearly been backed and created by Turkey and Qatar, actually. And they're, because I mean, revolutions cost money, zillions. And you see that Turkey's hating Israel now. And yet they're joining together to put this government in or allow it to be. But then they're not, because Israel's bombing them, because they're going after the Jews, as I spoke about last week. It's a very confusing situation. Because you ask yourselves, you know, is this government really interested? As they say, they have been in making peace with Israel. And where does Turkey fit in this? Turkey hates Israel so much. Especially under this government. And it just led me to think. And I'm not sure I can pierce through all the obfuscations. But I'll tell you what I think. Based on what I know. And obviously it goes without saying. Maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong. I don't claim to know everything. Or have the correct analysis. But I think I do. Otherwise I wouldn't share it with you. And especially in the context of history. So let me get right down to it. Turkey is an interesting place, especially under Erdogan, because the Turks have a long history, as you know, and they had a great empire once upon a time, as I've spoken of many times. And hold on for a second. So, they had the Ottoman Turkish Empire. Now, the Ottoman Turkish Empire, like Suleiman the Magnificent, all that was gigantic. He conquered Hungary. That means he owned a third of Europe, plus the whole Middle East, Turkey and Israel and Syria and Lebanon and Iraq. And a good chalik of Saudi Arabia, from time to time Yemen, and beyond. And North Africa, Egypt, North Africa, is gigantic. That's the Ottoman Empire. And Ottoman's the name of a certain tribe of Turks. And they ruled this for hundreds of years. Now listen closely. The history of Turkey, as far as non-Muslims, this is my analysis, this is my opinion. The history of Turkey, as far as non-Muslims, has two eras, A and B, the first one and the second. The first one was hundreds of years ago when the Ottoman Turks created their empire through military conquest, because that's how they captured everything, through war. And when they did that, I just told you, they took over a third of Europe. So they had a veldt of non-Muslim Christians in the conquered territories. I mean, these were Muslims, Sunni Muslims, may I say. And they ruled, they conquered, and they ruled tough, too. The Greeks, the Bulgarians, Romania, Serbia, Hungary, Albania. I mean, a veldt of peoples, the great, great, great majority of whom were not Muslim. They were Christians who hated them. But you were under their control. Nothing you could do about it. And in Asia, you have also, in the area that you and I today call Turkey, before the Turks took it over, was the Eastern Roman Empire, the Byzantine Empire. So you had a veldt of Greeks and Armenians and that kind of business, all of whom were Christians, Eastern Christians, meaning not Roman Catholic, but the Greek Orthodox, the Armenian Orthodox, and all that business. And when you go to Syria and Eretz Yisrael and all the rest of it, again, there's a lot of Christians in those places. And when you look at Iraq, for example, a lot of Shiites and people that the Sunnis consider to be heretics. And the Druze were part of the empire, and we see now that the Sunnis consider the Druze to be Shabtai Tzvinix, as I tried to explain, and so on and so forth. In Egypt, you had a veldt of Coptic Christians. So in other words, it was a huge population of Christians. The majority was Muslim, but big minority of non-Muslims. And you had Jews, not as big as the Christians. And this is the way it went. And technically, under the rules of Islam, you could have Jews and Christians living in the Ottoman Turkish Empire as long as they're subservient to you and recognize that they're third-class citizens and they're inferior to you and they don't get uppity, etc., etc., etc. Then they can, you know, they can have their religion under the 50-50, sometimes tough, sometimes mild conditions of Islam. I mean, technically speaking, they can't make a new shul, you know, and they have to get special permission to repair the old one. Don't ask. It's a million rules. And that's how Jews lived. Now, from the point of view of the Turkish rulers, in the 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 1700s, you had Jews there and you had Turks there. And by the way, you had some, believe it or not, you still had some Yazidis and some other groups there that are Mamshob de Avodah Zarah. I don't know how the Turks let them alone, but they did. They paid them off. They were hiding in the mountains. I don't know exactly. But this is the funny situation you had over there. And so it was a polyglot Middle East and one big country. And the Turks, you know, had obviously differing attitudes towards the Christians and the Jews. The Christians, they looked at as a disloyal element potentially, which was true. So in other words, let's say, for example, I'm Greek. I'm dreaming of the day that we'll get rid of the Turks and one day restore Greece. Or Bulgaria, same thing, they're Christians. Or Romania or Hungary, naturally. So, of course, the people you conquer and occupy don't like you and dream of the opportunity to get rid of you and reestablish their old, independence and sovereignty. And, by contrast, you got the Jews. The Jews have no ambitions whatsoever. They just want to be left alone and practice their religion. They're grateful for that. The Jews dream one day a Mashiach is going to come down from Shemayim and the Beis Hamikdash will come down in fire. And it'll be Nisim and it flows. And that's how the Jewish state will be, will be rebuilt. So the Muslims say, yes, good, dream on. It's all baloney. Fine. If that's your religion, no problem. Because it has no Ulam Hazeh component. You're dreaming that one day, God will, miraculously restore the Jews through a supernatural messianic figure. It's the same way the Jews think about somebody else's religion. That's the Muslims thought about the Jewish religion. So he never said like this, change your prayers from Sevzenu, Yenim, Shulchan, Tzim, Rachamim, Adrabah. Pray all you want. You know what I mean? It's all baloney. The Jews, therefore, were never looked at as a kind of a threat. On the other hand, they were condescended to as wimps. Because Jews didn't fight back. That's, they couldn't. And the culture was one that you don't ever mess with a Muslim, otherwise it'll be bad news. You saw what happened, by the way, not long ago in Iran. I know you followed this story. They executed a Jewish boy because somebody punched him out and he punched him back. And under the laws of Islam, in Iran, you can't punch a Muslim. So Chayv Misa, and they killed him. I mean, not long ago. You punched me first. That's the rules. You have to take the punch. You can't fight back. So the Jews were looked at as wimps. And so, but from the political point of view, they were not looked as a threat. The Christians was the opposite. Now, here's the thing. This means that for hundreds of years, in relative terms, and that's a big R with relative, you had a toleration. The Muslims are the rulers, and the Christians and the Jews are the ruled, but they're allowed to have religious freedom and autonomous coercive communities and all the rest of that. This went on, I would say, until the late 16th, 1700s, because until then, Turkey was expanding, always conquering new territory. But starting in the late 1600s, it started to go the other direction. and they started losing territory, bit by bit, province by province, over a long, long time. So the main one was Russia, and to some extent the Austrian Empire. They start fighting back and winning and taking back territory. So the Austrians took back Hungary, and the Russians took back a belt of territory, or they conquered a belt of territory in the 16th, 1700s, Catherine the Great. And because, the Turks used to rule the Crimea, the northern part of the Black Sea. It was huge. And they simply started losing each time. You see? Now, they fought hard, but they couldn't beat the Europeans, because of the technology and this and that and the other. So things started going the wrong direction. And I'm sure the Turks must have been asking themselves, why is it this way? Everything I just said accelerated in the 1800s. The Greeks, for example, in the early 1800s, had a successful rebellion. It was very bloody, and they won their independence to some extent, meaning a chelik of Greece, and others later on, the Bulgarians, without going through all the details. So, not in the Middle East. In the area of Turkey, Israel, Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, Egypt, the Turks kept that. But in the Christian areas, they started losing chelik by chelik, so that over the course of the 1800s, they lost like a huge amount of it. And by the time the First World War came around, or just before it, they lost just about everything they had in Europe. So the whole third of Europe they lost. And why is this? So, logically, they understood the technological gap. But one of the things these defeats brought about was a feeling in the Turkish elites that it's etzem dangerous to have non-Muslims, especially in large numbers, in the empire, because they're always looking, how to get rid of us. So instead of figuring out how to have a political accommodation with them, let's kill them. This is before Hitler, right? In fact, Hitler took inspiration from them, to be honest. And many of you have heard of the Armenian Genocide, which means that the Armenians were living all over what you and I today call Turkey, the eastern part of Turkey. And instead of trying to figure out how to come to some political understanding with the Armenians and include them in the empire, starting in the early 1900s, and especially in the First World War, they said, heck with it, just kill everybody. They made a genocide. So this same Erdogan who's saying Israel made genocide, Turkey made the genocide, the original one. By that I mean they went deliberately and killed men, women, and children. Now, they weren't Hitler. They didn't have the modern technology of Auschwitz, which are factories of mass extermination with gas chambers, all the rest of it. Okay, they did the best they could. Say they killed about 1.5 million, 2 million, something like that, through shooting, through bayoneting, through starvation, through all kind of tortures. If you're interested, look it up. And it's famous. The world didn't do anything. So the Armenians really took it on the chin. But from the Turkish point of view, this was a successful policy. In other words, if you kill them, they can't cause you any trouble. That's the terrible logic of the Hitler thinking. It does work. If you don't like the Jews, if you kill them, you don't have to worry about them. It's the philosophy of the exterminator. If I get rid of all the mosquitoes, everybody will be happy. It works, self-evidently. So this mentality really got into the mindset of the Turks, I would say. And up to the end of the First World War, they prosecuted this policy. The Jews in Eretz Yisrael would have been killed out by the Turks, by the way, in 1915 or 16. The Yekkes in Berlin were able to lobby the German government, which was allied with Turkey, that they should tell and pressure the Turks, don't kill the Jews. And that's why it didn't happen. In fact, there was a German general named Falkenhayn, a field marshal, one of the big German generals. And he stopped the Turks. Google it, look up online. It's an interesting story. He was a real Prussian. By the way, his son-in-law was one of the guys that later tried to assassinate Hitler, which is just interesting. But anyway, that's, how it went. So by the time you get to the early 20th century, the Turks had switched from policy A to policy B. You see, by that time, they had lost all the territory in Bulgaria, in Yugoslavia, as we call it today, or used to, in Serbia, in Greece, in Albania, what do they call now, Macedonia, Bosnia, this, that, and the other, and Romania, and so on and so forth, all the Anias and Shmanias. And the local people naturally supported their fellow Christian, conquerors, right? In other words, the Greeks wanted the Greek army come and liberate them from the Turks. The Bulgarian Christians wanted the Bulgarian army come and liberate from the Turks, and they did, okay? So the policy I'm talking about, let's just kill everybody, was the Turks with their back to the wall, in which they said, we lost all of Europe. How do we make it we don't lose Asia? How do we make it we don't lose the Middle East? You get it? We want to hold on to Turkey, Israel, Syria, Iraq, and so on and so forth. So there weren't a lot of Christians there, but there were some. But you can see, look, if you're Catholic, for example, in Syria or Palestine, you want the French to win in World War I because the French will come in and take over Syria, which they did do, and they will favor the Catholics. I mean, just give an example. It's natural. So from the Turkish point of view, kill all the Catholics. They didn't have to worry about that. This is the way it was heading, but it didn't go that way because Turkey was defeated at the end of the First World War, and they lost control of all these territories. So they continued to do it to some degree inside Turkey itself against the Kurds and so forth. They bombed them and stuff like that. And the Kurds are Muslims, but they're not Turks. And the Kurds would like to set up their own country. I don't blame them. And so it's the same kind of attitude. If Turkey was able to, they would have killed all the Kurds. And then you don't have to worry about the problem anymore. Do you get what I'm saying? So they switched from the tolerant mentality on the one hand to the extermination mentality on the other. They just weren't able to implement it. And I think, as best as I can understand, this way of thinking dominates the Erdogan types and those elites. They say, what happened to us? Once upon a time, we were a gigantic world power. And they're Muslims, too. Once upon a time, the power of Islam was manifest in its control over a veldt of Christians. And we had a third of Europe, and maybe would have taken all of Europe, and so on and so forth. And we lost it. Allah must be angry at us for some reason or another. Maybe we weren't zealous enough. Maybe this, maybe that. And if you ever see the papers, they always call him Neo-Ottoman. That Erdogan and those guys around him want to restore the Ottoman Empire in some way. And as far as I can tell, they are trying to do it. And by the way, they're not unsuccessful, because they are the ones shoving, Turkey is the one shoving a lot of Muslims into your European countries and Western Europe, France, Germany, Belgium, and all that stuff. And they are taking over. Even Ireland, I see online, is being taken over Muslim. It's crazy, because the European liberalism is now biting the Europeans in the face. And so the DD, the Turks have a long-term, goal. Doesn't have to happen today, but it's going in that direction. And we will restore the ancient Turkish Empire, or at least we will turn Europe Muslim. And then what happens? Well, even if they go Muslim, but there'll be separate countries. There'll be a country called Hungary, a country called Austria, a country called Italy. No, there won't. Here's why. If everybody is from Sunni Muslim, they have one big empire like in the old days. That's the way they feel it should be. The Ummah, they call it. Like in Hebrew, the Ummah. And they look at the maps, these type of people, of Syria and Lebanon and Iraq. The French and the British made up, like I told you many times. If you're Erdogan now, and you see there's a country called Syria, you say, no, there's not. 100 years ago, 120 years ago, it was a province of the Ottoman Empire and been for many hundreds of years. Syria has never been a real country. It's true. Iraq, Lebanon, Jordan, they've never been a real country. And they were under us for a long, long time. And they had it good, the way he sees it. You understand? Either Arabs and we're Turks. It doesn't matter. We're all Muslims. That's what matters. You see, so how you put, what you put your primary focus on in terms of definition, identity. Do you identify as a Syrian or do you identify as a Muslim? You see what I'm saying? Do you identify as an Austrian or identify as a, I'm asking this question. A Muslim immigrant in France today, who's a from Muslim, if he's honest, are you a Frenchman or are you a Muslim? I mean, come on, okay? So Erdogan, these guys counted this because you heard the term caliphate, the caliph. Who used to be the caliph for hundreds of years? The Sultan of Turkey. Look it up. The Ottoman Sultans were the caliphim because the from Muslims said they're the ones extending the power of Islam across entire continents, and they're conquering all these unbelievers, which was true, that must mean that God likes them, therefore they should be the leaders of Islam. So he, or he hopes his successors, you know, I don't know what his long-term plans are. That's the direction of the Turkish policy, to, in my opinion, to restore the caliphate and get rid of all these artificial borders that were put in by the Christians. And so now you look at Turkey, and it's pretty clear by now that the Turkish army and intelligence service, together with Qatar, they put in the current regime in Syria. They funded them. They created their army of jihadists, and they're the ones who knocked out Assad, which in of itself is a good thing, but the question is what comes afterwards. And in my opinion, Erdogan realizes that it's more kedai for them to be friends with the U.S. than not. I think, in my opinion, he might be afraid of Russia or China or something like that. And America's a patsy. And so, you know, Trump and all the rest of it. And in my opinion, the policy of Turkey and Qatar has been to kiss up to America. And because America will help them to try to knock out these regimes, which are anti-American, like Saddam Hussein's in Iraq and Assad's in Syria. But the Americans are dummies, they think, because they think it'll be replaced with a more democratic and pro-Western kind of government. Ha, 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 we'll put in a Sunni fundamentalist regime that will not be overtly anti-American, because that will turn off the Americans. But really, 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 because they're super from Muslims, you know, until the time is ripe, they'll just simply concentrate on ruling that territory and establish their control. And when the time is right, we'll all join together, create a giant caliphate, and then we can throw America out or something like that. That's what I think is going on. Plus, they're also counting on a heavy Islamic immigration into America. So, and they're dreaming to turn America around. Now, who the heck knows? Look at Mamdani in New York. Who the heck knows? You don't know. So, this is the large way that Turkey's thinking. If I'm right, then yes, they put in this rebellion against Assad, because Assad was not a from Muslim. He wasn't even Muslim. And he had a secular Syrian state. And like Saddam Hussein did in Iraq, because they're Ba'athist party. The Ba'ath party is a secular party. And they, fundamentalists like the Muslim Brotherhood and people like that, ISIS, have been fighting them forever. I told you about that in the past. And now, because of this October 7th war, when Israel happened to knock out the Hezbollah with the pager attack and kill Nasrallah, so everybody saw this as a chance for the jihadist gripes, the Al-Jolani, the Ahmed Shara group, to come in and take over Syria, which they did 1, 2, 3. But they were smart, and they said, and again, Qatar is advising, all the others are. And, you know, everybody in the Trump administration on the Qatar payroll, everyone, including Jared. I mean, check it out. They all get millions and billions. It's crazy. They're doing what they accuse the Jews of doing in the protocols of Zion. I'm going to do another podcast on that. But that's what they're doing. So, and it's hard to, listen, it's hard to turn. If somebody walked into a room to me and said, hey, I have a suitcase, and in the suitcase is $10 million in cash, it's hard to say no. As it's the Matthias. It's hard to say no, you know? So you justified yourself however you do it. It's hard to say no. And this is how they operate. And so they said to Jelani, the head of the Syria now, just say that you're going to make peace with Israel. You don't have to mean it. That's what's required to get American support. And it's true. Because when he said that, many Israelis, and I myself was intrigued, and Mordechai Kedar and all those guys, and in the Trump administration and other countries, they said, oh, listen, yes, he's an Islamic jihadist and he ran to ISIS and they kill people and all this kind of stuff for fun, but hey, they want to make peace with Israel and they want to wipe out Hezbollah, and which is true, and things like that. So just say it and you get a lot of creds in the West, and they'll take off the sanctions, which Trump did. And you'll start pouring in a lot of money, and you get rich and powerful, and then Syria will be a big and powerful country. But in the style of Turkey round 2, the thing to do is to make sure you don't have any groups that aren't like you, so you won't have a problem of Armenians and Greeks, and in Syria, you got the Alawites and the Druze, as we know, and the Kurds and the others, the Christians. So just kill them all. And that's what they're doing. Now, if you want to be friends with America, which is part of the shtick that I described, you can't just simply come out and say, I'm going to kill everybody. But you do it, and then you say you're sorry. You do it, and then you say you're sorry. You do it again, and you say it was a mistake. And Lemaisa, meanwhile, while you're apologizing, you killed everybody and the others run away. So what's scary about that is, if what I'm saying is true, then the plan is to cleanse Syria, in other words, kill everybody. And you can see, if you look online, to kill the men and carry off the women. Hachisem kol nekeva, like it says in the parsha. And they show it on the YouTube. And what do they do with the women? They'll become part of their harem, and the kids will be raised as Sunni Muslims. So notice, the mother could be a Druze or something like that, or Alawite. But once she's captured, any baby she has will be part of the new team, part of the Sunni team. That's how they roll in that part of the world. That is how it goes. And Islam has always been very successful in that. For over 1,000 years, you can look it up. It's a very successful policy of theirs. And they're doing it now. See, if what I'm saying is true, then until the right time, just make the right noises about Israel. Say, we'll make peace, we'll make a truce, we'll let you keep the Golan Heights, we'll do this, we'll do that. And Erdogan is backing that. Why would Turkey back that? Turkey hates Israel. They say it every day, Yom HaValayla. And they mean it. Unless, and this is just my opinion, and I, by the way, I hope I'm wrong. I very much hope I'm wrong. I just get the feeling that this is what's happening. They're playing everybody. Trump is pro-Israel, so he watches them. So they got to tread carefully, but they are. And you do a massacre here and do a massacre there. And if Israel comes in, they'll say, oh, it's not right, and so on and so forth. But they're not going to war against Israel until the right time. So in the perfect world, they'll get rid of all the non-Sunnis in Syria. They'll kill them or chase them out of the country. They're not these Muslims are not exactly like Hitler, just very close. Hitler said, if you're Jewish, I don't care if you convert, I'm going to kill you because it's racism. In the Islam, if you convert, it's okay. If the Druze tomorrow would say, we're going to come Sunni Muslims and mean it, they'd be fine. They don't want to do that. But, you know, it's a little bit different. Or if you capture a Jewish person or a lady or something like that, and you run off with her, and, you know, now you convert her and her kids to the Sunni, I mean, they're okay with that. It's not exactly like Hitler, but it's close enough, you see? And so what they would like to do is clear out all of Syria if anybody's not a Sunni Muslim. The Kurds are a special problem because they are Sunni, but they're not going along with this program. So, and they fight back. So I don't know how that will turn out. You know, and Israel's in bed with the Kurds, like they're with the Druze. That's a separate parsha. And believe me, I wish and you wish the Kurds should have a big uprising and knock out everybody else and create their own large Kurdistan, their own country, because that would take a big bite out of Syria and Turkey and Iraq and Iran. It would. You look up the map. But that's exactly why those countries don't want to allow it. So the Middle East is so complicated. And Israel's situation is so complicated. And everything I told you, the Mossad knows 10 times over. And they have Mossad representatives in all these places. And I think everybody's discerning now, you know, behind the scenes, what I've been saying just now for the last 20 minutes or so, or 30 minutes. This seems to be the plan. And so Erdogan will consider it a success if his guy, Jalani, Ahmed al-Shara, is successful in controlling Syria, which they do right now, and controlling every square inch of it, which they don't do right now, and anyone that's not exactly with the program will get killed or chased out, which they're doing in spurts, you know, stops and starts. And they're fairly, you know, efficient at it. As I understand it, over 90% of the Christians in Syria fled the country. That's my understanding. And maybe more. So Syria used to have a fair number of Christian minority. Now they don't. Which is fine. So then we don't have to worry about them anymore. Let them live in Europe. Let them live in America. Get them the heck out of Syria. And by the time it's over, we'll have a whole country called Syria, which everybody's just like me. We're all Sunni Muslim. And then, when that's right, and maybe the next move might be Lebanon, because Lebanon has a lot of bad stuff also from their point of view. They got a lot of Shiites there, that's a Hezbollah. And they got a lot of, you have Alawites there also. You have a lot of Christians there. The Maronite Christians are a big group in Lebanon, and they're armed, and so on and so forth. So you got to, you know, cleanse Lebanon, because from a Syrian point of view, even a secular Syrian, Lebanon has no right to exist. It's really part of Syria. You look at the map, it's like a chalik of Syria. And the French created, the Christians created, to split up Syria, have a special position for the Christians in Lebanon. So if I'm a Muslim, I say, the heck with that. Why should I allow that? So, you know, this seems to be the plan. If they succeed, so then you'll have one large homogenous Syria. They might extend this into Iraq, which would be a bloody business, because Iraq is on the border of Iran, and Iraq has a belt of Shiites, plus other groups. It's mainly the Shiites. To them, the Shiites is also apicursus. You hear what I said? To the Sunni, the Shiite is apicursus. And what's the chiyuv in Islam for apicursus? Chayv Misa. No question about it. And so, you know, that would be a bloody business. They don't mind. And imagine, in their way of thinking, if you now have Turkey, which has basically all Sunnis, basically. I mean, there's a few thousand Jews, if that. So, Turkey and Syrian Lebanon and Iraq, under one set of rulers, all of whom think alike. So you basically have a restoration of the Ottoman Turkish Empire. In that case, Israel's toast. That's how they see it. Because if Israel has to take on the combo of, you know, Turkey and Syria and Lebanon and Iraq, and others would join in if that happened, how could you survive this? Now, I'll tell you the truth. And this is just, obviously, everything I'm saying is just an opinion, a speculation. Who the heck knows? Maybe this is what they mean by Gog-Magog. I mean, I could see it. I hope I'm not right, but it makes sense to me. If what I just described happened, and it seems to be happening as I'm speaking, as you're speaking, and nobody's stopping it, America's not stopping it. If I'm right, this moment sounds like a Gog-Magog. And really, not only I'm talking about read the last part of the book of Daniel. And when I say Gog-Magog, it says there'll be Eis Tzar LeYaakov Asher Lo Hayah Me'olam. That's what the pasuk says. It'll be the worst time in Jewish history. And, you know, I always refer to Gog and Magog and all this World War III, you know, colloquially. But World War III would be a nuclear, right? Not going to be a conventional war, it'd be a nuclear. And the Middle East is pretty doggone nuclear and getting worse all the time. And so if you have the scenario that I just laid out for you, today, tomorrow, 5 years, 10 years, I don't even think it'll be 10 years. You're going to have like a war of extermination and survival and so on and so forth. And if you go, it'll be nuclear. And the way it's described there, you know, in Zechariah is the skin will fall off and the eyeballs will fall out. No, it sounds nuclear. Like, you know, with the radioactivity and, what's the right word? Yeah, radioactivity. And, you know, the nuclear stuff. And, like I say, I hope I'm wrong, but these are to predict. I'm not the one who made these prophecies. They're in the book of Daniel and Zechariah. And it says, over there, it will require direct divine intervention to save Klal Yisrael. It says, in that time, the Jewish angel Michael, will have to personally intervene. And then will come the Messianic year, all the rest of it. So, this could be all a pipe dream, and I could be totally misreading the tea leaves, but I don't think so. And when I look at Erdogan and his policies, and how Turkey's operating, and then I look at Qatar, who seems to be in bed in the same thing. These are both two Sunni, you know, ruling groups. And they realize that Islam has taken a big hit in the 20th century and broken up into different pieces. And they dream about restoring it to one big piece and then taking over everything that's in their way and maybe ruling the world, taking over the whole world and getting rid of anybody who's not like them. That's their idea of a paradise. It does sound like the end of Daniel. So I hope I'm wrong. Obviously, but But this is the only way I can make sense out of the policies of the major powers like Turkey and the others, and how they're playing this funny game in Syria. And what America has been involved in, as far as I can tell, is deconfliction. They're creating, you know, meetings and mechanisms that Turkey and Israel shouldn't clash directly. I think the Turks have no problem with that. We're not going to clash directly. It's premature. Let's wait till we get all of our ducks in a row, and then we'll do it. So, what can I tell you? I'm saying this in the 3 weeks. You know, tomorrow night is already the beginning of the 9 days. And Eretz Yisrael, Medinat Yisrael, Tzahal has been Eitz Tzar Yaakov for a long time. And we're not living in regular times. You understand? Now, as I said before, I have no special insight. And, you know, and like I say, you know, this could be a wild guess, which I hope it is. But I don't think so. And that's the reason I'm sharing this with you. To try to make some sense, at least for me. And if you agree, for you, of this funny combination of events and maneuverings among the various powers right now involved in the Levant in the western part of the Middle East. Anyway, like I said before, I just wanted to share that. Really want to thank Ehud Sassoon and family. I met Mrs. Sassoon also again. We had lunch together at Jonathan Adler's house in Teaneck. And thank you for sponsoring. And with that, I wish everybody a good day.